This is the No Dama podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this morning I'm joined by Felina Hermans, assistant professor at Delft University and a fellow podcaster from SE Radio. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to join me.
Thanks for having me.
Felina, can you tell us a little bit about yourself first, please?
Yes, so I'm Felina Hermans. I work at TU Delft, where I teach at the university, but I also research. And in addition to that, I have some fun side jobs. As you already mentioned, I'm a podcaster at SE Radio, where we do diverse topics about software development. And also I organize a conference called The Joy of Coding in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, aimed at professional developers.
What time of the year do you have your conference?
In June.
Okay, so we're recording this in mid-February now. So have you called for papers out or?
Ticket sales is open, and we have a call for lightning session still open. So if people want to go to joyofcoding.org, they can check out everything there.
What's the conference about?
It's called The Joy of Coding, and that's because it's about the joy of coding. So there are many conferences that are specifically about a framework or a technology or a language. They are very practical. They're very much about what will you use in your job tomorrow, it's great that these things exist. But The Joy of Coding is more about what makes us tick. What do we like about programming? So we have talks about programming artworks. We had a talk about programming music. We have workshops about doing crazy stuff with Arduinos. It's very much what makes programming so much fun and not necessarily what kind of stuff you need for your job.
So that kind of lines up with what we're going to talk about today, which has been a big part of your studies over the last few years. And it's the very simple but very hard to answer question, perhaps, of what is programming?
Yep.
So can you tell us a little bit about your research, and then we'll go into in more detail as we move along through the podcast?
Yes. This question, what is programming, is really something that has kept me occupied for the last, I don't know, decade in various forms. And one of the reasons for that was my PhD dissertation was about spreadsheets. The short snippet summary of my dissertation is that I made an IDE for spreadsheets. Spreadsheet refactoring, spreadsheet TDD inside of spreadsheets, helping people to be as professional developers as more traditional software developers. And it was lots of fun. I really had a lot of fun developing those tools and talking about how spreadsheets are amazing programming tools. But many people responded to that work by saying, it's not really real programming. So that led to the question, what is real programming? Why do people feel that a formula in a spreadsheet, even if it's something like a conditional, an if formula, which arguably is one of the building blocks of any programming language, why is an if in a spreadsheet not programming, but an if in Python is programming? Why do people feel that way? Where does it come from that literally the same concept, looking the same, doing the same in a different context, suddenly is seen as not real programming? I don't know. It interests me, this question.
So that's what you spent your time researching. And why did you think it was such an important question to address?
So I think one of the reasons that it's important is what is and what isn't programming, what isn't and isn't considered programming by the broader programming community, also reflects on who feels welcome in the programming community. And of course, it's not a surprise, everyone knows that the programming community is kind of homogeneous. Lots of men, lots of white people, lots of able-bodied people. Those are the type of people that feel very welcome in programming. And if we carry out a certain narrative where some things are and some things are not programming, then that also reflects who feels at home at programming conferences. For example, people that do lots of stuff with spreadsheets, even though it's super sophisticated, will probably not go to a program conference or not pick up a programming book or go to a programming YouTube channel, because we, as programmers, we all clearly communicate that they are not welcome, in a sense, in our community. So it's not just this hypothetical question of what is programming, and it's a deep philosophical thing. It directly reflects who is welcome or who feels welcome.
So we're going to dive into a little bit more about this whole topic. But if you were to, let's say, summarize, or what did you generally find? how would you summarize it? And then we'll kind of go into each of those aspects.
You mean how to summarize what is programming?
Well, just because I think it'll help the listener as we kind of progress through the story of each of the steps you took to find your answer, if they know the answer ahead of time.
Yeah, I see. So there's a difference, of course, between what I think programming is and what I observe the community in general, whatever that exactly is, thinks programming is. So I personally think programming is very broad, but what we see if you chat with people, what do they, and do they not think is programming? Textual programming in a programming language aimed at professionals like C# or Python is seen as more programming than something visually like a modeling environment or a spreadsheet or a system that's more configuration. And even within languages aimed at developers, at professionals, still there is a spectrum where maybe C programming is seen as more real programming than front-end stuff in PHP. Also, within the programming language, no one would say that PHP is not a programming language, like they might say for a spreadsheet. But clearly, a PHP developer is a different type of programmer than a hardcore C developer. These aren't neutral observations. It is implying a certain hierarchy. So if I talk about what the community thinks programming is, I'm not just thinking about a binary, yes, spreadsheets are programming, no, C# is not programming. It's not that binary thing. It's more a gradient towards less and more programming.
Gotcha. All right, so let's wind it back a bit, because I think you've alluded to a few times. I think something I read by you consider Excel to be an incredible programming language, but it's disrespected, let's say.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think Excel is an incredible programming language. I say this sort of tongue-in-cheek, but also seriously when I say spreadsheets are the best programming language that has ever existed in programming. It's such a good programming language that people don't even know they're programming. Which, it's funny, but it's also so true. I mean, people don't pick up Java by accident. When you open Eclipse, if you even get to install Eclipse on your machine, where would you start? You don't accidentally write some Java and you're like, oh, I was analyzing some data. Where spreadsheets is a very easy entryway. You don't even know you're programming. Maybe initially you're not. You're just entering some data and you're like, I need an average. And you can do it right there. It's a very encouraging, low threshold environment that doesn't communicate, beware, there be dragons. This is programming stuff you're entering. So for that reason, I argue that it's a great programming environment. And yeah.
I think you even refer to it as, let's say, a very early functional language or a very common functional language.
It is a functional language. If you think about the formulas in a spreadsheet, the only thing a formula in a spreadsheet can do is change its own cell. It's very much side effect free. It can only take input from other cells and calculate values based upon inputs. So it is side effect free in a sense. You could say that it's purely functional.
So at some point, it sounds like from watching your presentations and reading your work, you got tired of talking to us professional adults and you decided to move more towards kids who are more open-minded. How did that come about?
Yeah, it was really a total coincidence. So when I was in this phase at the end of my PhD, so for 4 years, I had worked exclusively on spreadsheets and people kept telling me it's not real programming. It's not real programming. Really? You wrote a dissertation on spreadsheets. It wears you down. It's not something that you can just brush up. It does something, especially your thesis work. You are very attached to that. So I didn't really realize what was happening, but I just got less and less excited about this topic because, among other things, this type of reactions from people. So through people I knew, I just moved to a new city and I knew some people and they were looking for a programming teacher for a programming club on Saturday. So I was like, oh, that sounds fun. Let's just go there on Saturdays. I can meet some new people and do something good for my community. So I started doing this programming for kids stuff on the side as purely voluntary work. I wasn't planning to do research on them. I just thought I can help a bunch of kids. But while observing those children program, I saw many similarities to what I saw in spreadsheet land, let's say, because people in spreadsheets, even though they are real programmers, they often don't see themselves as programmers and they don't have proper tools to support them like we have those tools in more traditional IDEs. And we have tools that do a refactoring for you, that help you test your stuff. Those type of professional tools aren't necessarily present in spreadsheet land. And I saw the same with those kids. They were like spreadsheet users, very goal driven. They wanted to build a robot. They didn't care about code quality. They didn't care all their variables were A, B, C, and B, B, B. They just wanted to get the robot to do some maze following or whatever we were programming. So they weren't necessarily very interested in code quality, but of course they were frustrated by a lack of code quality because they come back the next Saturday, they opened their program, and they're like, oh my God, which fool wrote this? I'm like, yeah, that was you last week. Remember, you didn't care about my advice on variable naming.
Are you sure now they were kids and it wasn't an office of people like me?
Yeah, so we saw some very similar and understandable behavior. So I was like, that's interesting. These children are also producing what we call code smells. Pieces of programming that just... there's not necessarily a bug or an error, but it isn't really nice structured and it could hamper understandability or maintainability in the future. So then I wrote one paper, code smells in block-based languages, so in visual languages aimed at children. And I thought, that's it. But then clearly we're talking about this. So it wasn't just that paper. From there on, I got interested in this idea of maybe sort of a tension. On the one hand side, you want to teach kids about code quality. It's important to start that early. But on the other hand, you also want to foster kids' enthusiasm. And if they're really engaged in a maze-solving robot, you don't want to bug them with boring stuff. But if it's so messy code that they got frustrated in 7 days, that can also hamper their enthusiasm. So I got interested in this space of code quality and code smells for children and novices that are learning to program.
And then were you teaching them, let's say, the formal code smells that we're aware of? Things like, I don't know, spaghetti code, bad naming, no source control, bad typing. Did you go into that level of detail or did you keep it much simpler for them?
A little bit. So in these block-based languages, not all code smells manifest itself. So something like typing isn't necessarily an issue because it's all dynamic-like typing. You don't have to say this variable is an integer. The system sort of figures it out itself, even though there's some visual type systems going on in some of these languages. However, some code smells that we did talk about with children are very familiar, like long methods. Is every programmer hates long methods. You really want to have short descriptive method names. So this is something that kids also struggle with. If you put 20 blocks in one little block-based program, it's also a lot harder to figure out what is going on. And we actually measured this in experiments. If you have long methods, but also code clones, duplication in your source code, which is also arguably an adult code smell. Children that have programs that suffer from those code smells will perform less on understanding and maintaining source code that they're playing with. So it's very much the code smells that we're used to, but not everyone, every of those code smells really applies because the programming language is not a textual O language, and that's what code smells were designed for.
Did you find, though, that, let's say, the better kids at programming didn't produce the code smells? Or was it that the kids who accidentally produced code smells got frustrated and didn't do as well at programming because they already kind of confused themselves or made life difficult for themselves?
Oh, that's a really good question. That's actually not what we explored. So in our study, we created programs and then we exposed children to our smelly or non-smelly version of the program because we wanted to have programs that were sort of equal in what they were doing, but only differs in whether or not they would have code smells. But it's interesting to And I'm thinking of how would I do this data analysis? It's interesting if we would indeed see what type of children make what type of goat smells, and is there some correlation between their performance? But that's not what we measured. We created programs and we just wanted to understand how do kids perform in the presence of goat smells.
Because I know with my own work, at some point I was doing some long project that had a lot of key value pairs that had to be searched. And I went down a particular track and it was tough, but it worked. It was performant. I liked it. Came back to it a few months later, showed it to someone, and then smacked my head and said, why did I use that structure? You know, because I was at it every day and I was trapped into a deadline and I was trapped into, well, this is fine. I didn't think of alternatives. So I produced less good code than I could have simply because I had started with the point of producing a bad solution. If I had paused, stopped, thrown it all away, which is really hard to do because you'll still remember what you did, I would have come up with something better.
Yes, yeah, that's a very interesting question. And then especially in the case of novice programmers, of course, you as a professional, you're also learning. So you look back at your code and you're like, well, even if it was the best solution then, looking back at it, now I have learned about a new data structure that I could have used. This is especially also true, of course, for children that are learning to program. Initially, maybe they just know the five statements they know and they build everything with for loops. And then after a while, they realize there's something like a while loop, which could be nicer because you can dynamically adapt how often a loop runs. And then looking back, they would think, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't use a for loop and a condition that just skips the inner body if something happens. So the learning effect might also really reflect the change of reflection on your previous self's source code.
So then at some point you took the, you kind of, I think, compared learning programming as like learning to write without having learned to read.
Yes, definitely. So one of the metaphors that I really very much like is programming as writing. So going back to what we were talking about before, if we present programming in a certain way, then some people might feel welcome and other people might not feel welcome, especially children that we're teaching to. So a frame that we often use for children, if we teach them programming, also for adults, by the way, we say, oh, programming, it's logical thinking. Oh, programming, it's so mathematical, which is a frame that might be more welcoming to some people like boys and less welcoming to other people like girls. Another frame that we often use is programming is like building, it's like engineering. It's a frame that many people like. I myself, I'm a professor of software engineering. I cannot erase this metaphor from my existence because it's on my door and it's on my business card. But engineering implies certain beliefs and methods, because if you're engineering, if you're building a bridge, then you need careful planning. You can't just go, you know, all over the place and do, oh, a little bit of wood there and some metal. Oh, oops, it collapsed. Let's try again. So all these metaphors that we use, mathematics or engineering, have an effect on who is welcome in the field or who feels welcome. What I really like about the word writing and the concept of writing is that this term is immensely broad. Writing is writing a to-do list just for yourself. No one is reading it. Practical use, very small, one-time throwaway. That is writing. But if I'm saying I'm writing a book, no one thinks about me holding a pen or being on my typewriter or my laptop, only literally typing letters. If you're writing a book, people assume you're also planning. You have a plan. Is it a fiction book or nonfiction? You have to have a consistent universe. It can be like in chapter one, I have a sister, and in chapter two, suddenly it's a brother. Well, okay, it could happen, but then it should happen not by accident, but because that's my storyline. So writing is so incredibly broad. It's writing poetry. It's calligraphy. It can be just the physical art of writing. All of those things are writing, and no one takes issue with that. No one say, well, if you call it writing a poem, then I cannot write my to-do list. I would love programming to be as widely applicable as writing. Programming can be, I make something for myself because I need it, like to-do list. Programming can be creating an immense universe that can do many things, like, I don't know, Minecraft or Facebook or something that's so big that it would also naturally require planning. But programming sometimes can also be poetry. I just make something that is beautiful. It doesn't need to run. Maybe it doesn't even need to compile. It doesn't need to do anything. I'm just writing stuff because it's pretty and other people might be attracted to it because it's nice. This is why I like this writing metaphor so much, because it's so all-encompassing. It's very inclusive. No one ever says, if I'm writing a romantic story, oh, but that's not writing. No, it's all writing, and there's this variety, and it makes me very happy that this is a space where there's so much variety in activities.
And have you expressed that to people and gotten feedback? You know, what... How would you, let's say you wanted to have a program, I'm going to use the old word, a programming class for kids, but instead you put up, I'm having a writing class for kids. How would you advertise it so that it's clear what you're going to do?
Yeah, so we actually did some workshops with children where we said, this is a fairy tale workshop. So we very much gathered them, drew them in with the idea of, well, this is about creativity and storytelling and drawing. And then secretly it was a programming class because we were drawing and we were writing stories, but we were animating them with the computer. So framing programming in such a way can be very attractive for some kids that would never register for a programming course because maybe they're girls and are like, everyone tells me this is not for me, so clearly it's not for me. Or maybe they're from disadvantaged backgrounds where their parents wouldn't be like, oh, you know, here's a computer you can play with. They don't even know how to program. And they're like, oh, I can't do programming because I don't have a computer and I would never be capable of that. And the interesting thing is we did such an experiment in which we totally integrated programming, education, and creativity. And then if you ask kids what programming is to them, they would say wicked things like, programming is like a puppet theater, but on the computer. So you see, if we say programming is making animations and cool stories, then this frame resonates with the children and they see, oh, this is what programming's for. Okay. And then they may or may not like that. But at least they have a frame that's the frame that we want them to have. It's not accidentally that they get this frame. We were thinking about what do we want to impress upon those children, what we believe programming is, and we didn't accidentally make them believe it's like storytelling.
What do you do then, though, as, let's say, a child wants to advance from the application? I mean, you talked about a visual programming language, I think, was it for Lego in one of your talks?
Yes.
What do you do then when you want them to, I'm going to use the word advance, and that may or may not be the right word, but I'll just use it, to a more formal language, the likes of the Pythons, the C#, the Javas, and so on. And you have to start bringing in some rigor, let's say, where, you know, obviously I'm going way beyond what necessarily a kid might want to do, but at some point you will face the problems that I'll use the word you may not like, engineers face. How do you transition between those two states?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. Coming back to writing, because it's such a nice metaphor, there's also initially children are very much focused on just making letters and then making small sentences. And at one point, they make the step towards making stories. And then you need consistency and also a variety of styles. And young children might have stories like, well, we went to the doctor and then we went home and then we went to the supermarket and then I petted my cat and then I went to sleep. They don't have the right stylistic variety yet. So a similar issue, of course, happens in programming, where initially you're very much focused on learning some new blocks and then you want to put them together in bigger things and you need some structure. I'm not sure there is a one-size-fits-all model. Some children might need a lot of guidance and a lot of practice to make bigger programs. Other kids might be very interested in a specific topic. They don't necessarily care to, they don't want to learn Python, or they don't want to learn a more advanced topic, but they want to build a website. I don't know, I had a kid in my class, he wanted to build a website for the local supermarket. He was really engaged in that topic, and then secretly in that domain that they care about, you can bring in things like, oh, it needs different pages. So maybe you should write down in your notebook what the different pages are so that you can keep track of it. In general, I think many parents, of course, ask me questions like, I want to get my kid into programming, Felina, what do I do? So usually I ask them, okay, what is your kid into that isn't programming? Horseback riding or the local supermarket or swimming or, I don't know, crocheting. And see how you can bring programming to make something useful for that domain, because there's only a tiny subset of people that are naturally drawn to programming for programming. There are many people that are interested in making stuff and want skills to make whatever they want to make. So this is, again, of course, I mean, I sound very boring because I keep saying the same things, but this again is part of the frame of programming. Many of the things we believe, like spreadsheets are in programming, we also believe you need to be in love with programming. It's not just a tool, it's a way of life, and you should program Saturday morning to Sunday evening because it's so great and it's the best thing ever. We don't necessarily care for people as a community, for people who just need programming as a tool, and especially people that just do programming as a job to feed their family and then go home and do something else. Those aren't real programmers either. You could be a great systems designer, but if it's just 9 to 5 and you prefer to go to soccer practice, not real programming, not a real programmer at least. So focusing on the domain and focusing on the fact that programming is just a tool to get to where you want to be and not necessarily something you have to love for the beauty of programming is also another frame and another way we could attract more and more diverse people.
It's an interesting perspective because there's a perspective out there in programming that I very much disagree with, that programming is art or that it's beautiful or that it's, you know, some of this stuff, because that tends to come from the very elitists. And even though they're expressing programming as art and beauty, they're being very exclusionary because they're saying this sample, this snippet of code is just incredible and whatever you did isn't. And it's very strange that even though they're trying to encourage people to do something positive, it sometimes, what I find, comes across as negative. I'm not referring to you, I'm referring to the elitists out there.
Yes. Yeah, so anything where you say this is programming or this is better than something else is like a red flag to be like, no, that's not programming. What I do like about the people that say programming is art or programming should have intrinsic beauty is it is at least somewhat a juxtaposition of programming as engineering and programming as, you know, building something. So this is, I think, a spectrum where on the one hand side you could have programming as building and just making big things. And on the other side of the spectrum, you have more like code should have intrinsic beauty. At least it is widening the scope for some people. But if it takes the form of this is programming, but that other thing isn't, then yeah, I'm out.
There is an interesting article. I'll just mention it so that other people can find it, called Programming Sucks by a gentleman I've had on the podcast. I'll put show notes in, and he talks in a kind of jokingly about, you know, after a hard day at work and working on sucky programming, you come home, you sit down, you have a whiskey, and you open up this piece of code you love to look at, and it makes you calm. So, you know, even though it's a very joking article, but it's well worth reading, and it's also worth listening to the podcast I made with him. And again, I'll put the link in. But to kind of, let's say, come to a rounded conclusion for us all, what do we as experienced programmers, engineers, people in the industry do with this information we've gotten from you in the last half hour?
So one of the things I would really like people to do if they're listening to this episode is just take a sheet of paper and write down all the things they believe that is programming and that they believe isn't programming, and just reflect on that. What are the things that you think aren't programming and why do you think that? And maybe if you're brave enough to do real, like, deep introspection, are there people that I accidentally might have excluded or discouraged from programming by the beliefs that I believe in, like maybe a nice lady from the Netherlands doing a PhD on spreadsheets. So I would really like it if people did that. Like, what do I believe? And it's not wrong to believe programming is like engineering. There's nothing wrong with that. That is your main belief. But at least be open to the idea that other programmers could have a different vision on that. And that if someone is programming, I don't know, Scratch as an adult because it helps them do their job, then that's also fine. And in my talk, the talk I did at NDC London, I also talk about the running community as a community that is very much different from the programming community, in that runners, I'm a runner myself, not a very good one though, but other people that run, they're like, oh, you're also a runner. They don't care about your shoes, or they don't say, oh, really, your half marathon is 2 hours and 50 minutes? You could quit. That is so bad. People are very much, everyone that runs slow, fast, barefoot, on Adidas shoes, in a t-shirt, in the woods, in the streets, it's one thing, and everyone is excited about other people that are runners. I would so much like the programming community to be like that. Oh, you run on that type of shoes. Oh, you program Prolog for your company. That is cool. Tell me more about that. Oh, you use a visual language. That's interesting. I want to learn from you rather than I want to push you out. So if people just want to like check their own beliefs about programming and try to broaden it or try to challenge their own beliefs, I'd be super happy.
And would you encourage people to get involved with teaching kids, like coder dojos, things like that?
Yes, but an issue that we have with people that are in programming now is they do tend to have these beliefs because our community has been very friendly to them. So there would be an overrepresentation of men, of white people that would do the coder dojos. And with that come certain beliefs. Even if it's white men that are super open-minded, still the fact that they are running a club and not a black woman will imprint upon children something about what programming is and who programming is for. So rather than teaching a Saturday club, I know I do it myself because I love it, but rather than, or in addition to running Saturday clubs, I think it's also very important that we as programmers lobby with our local governments to put programming in schools, in high schools, in elementary schools, even as early as possible. Because when it's in a school, all the kids are exposed to it. And when it's in a school, they're exposed to it by their teacher rather than having also the free image, like with the lessons that, hey, this is what a programmer looks like. So yes, running those clubs is amazing. I love it. I still do it every Saturday. But in addition to that, we might also want to strongly lobby at our local government level to get this into schools where it will be more context free and less, I don't want to say ruined, but less affected by the view of people that are doing programming now.
I think we are going to reach the end of our time because you have to move on to something else. But any final notes, Filina?
No, I think I've said enough. If people after this podcast are still interested in hearing more from me or reading more from me, my website is filina.com, where I also blog about conferences and about these type of things and about my research show. If people are interested, maybe they want to check that out or follow me on Twitter. I'm at Filina on Twitter.
I'll put in links to both of those. Well, Filina Hermans, thank you very much for your time this morning. If you liked this episode, you might also like my discussion with Peter Welsh, author of the very well-known article, Programming Sucks. I chatted with him in episode 26 about that article and about his thoughts on programming and life in general. The opening music was The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was The Ascent by AA Alto from the album Bright Corners.